Hey, this is Matt Rosenberg, and you're listening to The Night Nerd.
Welcome to The Night Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Lance. It's Friday, so we're going to talk about what you want to talk about. And that is finishing up our week of The Four Horsemen. It's been a really fun week. I've enjoyed this week a lot. I love like history and all that kind of stuff, and especially talking things like this that transcend just one religion or theology and spread out into so many other things, not only thoughts, but video games, comics, everything like that. It's really cool. And we're going to finish it up with our last two horses. Yesterday, we talked about the White Horse, who is, we looked at a dozen different things as far as whether it's good or evil or disease or whatever, and the Red Horse, which is commonly war. So today, we're going to look at the Black Horse and the Pale Horse. So first, we have the Black Horse, who was introduced in Revelation 6, 5 through 6, and said, "When he broke the third seal, I heard the living creature say, 'Come.' I looked, and behold, a black horse, and he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard something like a voice in the center of the four living creatures say, 'A quart of wheat for a denarius, and three quarts of barley for a denarius. Do not damage the oil and the wine.'" So, this one is usually considered famine. That's where it kind of comes from, and everything. And because back in the day, the scales that they used, you know, depending, that's how they would figure out how much bread is and stuff. You know, it's like now when you go to the grocery store and it's, I don't know, bananas are $1 a pound, you know, and they put it on the scale and, oh, it's 2 pounds of bananas, you owe us $2 or whatever. It was the same thing back then. It's just not as fancy, obviously, as we have it. So that's how they would determine what they would charge for things. And the denarius was pretty much a day's worth of work. So a quart of wheat for a day's worth of work wasn't enough to feed a family. It was only enough for one person. And barley, which was less nutritious, you know, it was enough for a family, but it wasn't healthy. So you wouldn't be able to, you know, your family wouldn't be able to sustain off of that. So by charging these absurd amounts, you know, it would cause the poor especially to go into whisk away, you know, just starve to death and everything. And it's on the flip side, though, the oil and wine part, that's where a lot of different interpretations come from, because some people view it as, you know, the oil and wine, well, that was for the rich. So the poor people couldn't really afford it anyway. So don't worry about that. Leave that alone so that the rich, you know, get fatter while the poor suffer. And that is going to lead to a lot of problems. But some other people have also looked at it as the oil and wine pertain to people of the Christian faith, because they used that in different offerings and religious practices and stuff. So it's could kind of go either way. And still yet, there are people who said, because like where, you know, the olive trees for oil and grapevines, like they take root and that they hold steady and they're harder to get rid of versus, you know, wheat and barley, which locusts and stuff would come through and just devastate it all. So that was an easy famine to cause. And, you know, there's different things to be said there. I don't know which one of those I necessarily back, because there's, like I said, so many different ways to look at it. But no matter what, like the poor and stuff are getting screwed here. And you look at almost any revolution or anything in history, that's where things start to go bad. And our buddy, who we've talked about all week, well, a little bit all week, Edward Bishop Elliott, who he goes in saying that the balance is for judging. You know, it's not for bread necessarily, like symbolically it is, but it's about your crimes and is it worth this? You know, what is your life worth versus your good deeds? Especially because he wrote a lot about the craziness that was going on in the Roman Empire during their times that we'll get into a little bit more with the next horse. But he's kind of off on his own little thing. Like I said, for the most part, the other way is what most people kind of look at. Our final horse is the pale horse, who was introduced in Revelation 6, verse 7 through 8. And it was, when the Lamb broke the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature say, come. I looked, and behold, an ashen horse, and he who sat on it had the name Death, and Hades was following with him. Authority was given to them over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword and with famine and with pestilence and by the wild beast of the earth. Now, if you've seen Tombstone, they talk about this, you know, and we talked about it on Tuesday and how great it is for setting up the rest of the movie. But our final horseman is the only one that actually has a name. His name is Death. You know, the third horseman is the only one who talks, and this horseman is the only one that actually has a name. And when it says Hades followed, it actually, how we would interpret it, is like hell followed. You know, it wasn't like this James Woods blue flamed god that followed behind him. It was like actual, the gates of hell opening, swallowing all these people. And I think it's interesting because in the description, it's not said he's holding anything. You know, the first one, the white horse, had a bow and had the crown. The red horse had a sword, and then the black horse had scales. But with artist interpretation over all the years, it's just been kind of accepted that he has a, like a scythe or a sickle or whatever you want to call it, and he's the Grim Reaper. And that's, it just goes to show you like how art takes over life. And another thing that's kind of cool is, remember when we talked about the different words, different meanings and interpretations and translations of words? Well, the color of the horse in the original Greek is chloros, which, depending on the translation, can mean like green, greenish yellow, or pale. And so they usually translate it as either pale or ashen. Or you'll see a few that say pale green or yellowish green, but a lot of people think it is, the reason it is pale is because that word chloros was used in to describe like corpse, like the way dead bodies looked and stuff. In fact, chloros is where we get chlorophyll and chlorine and words like that. So I think, you know, maybe that's right. We'll go with pale. I think that works. And there's also an interesting part in the verse where it says, authority was given to them over a fourth of the earth. Now, some people argue if it was just Death and Hades or if it was all the horsemen. You know, because this is wraps up their intro and what's going on, and it affects, you know, who does it affect? There's things that people debate, and it's, I don't know, it's interesting. But I think it kind of applies to all of them, because we talk about sword and famine and pestilence and wild beasts, so we kind of hit on some of the other horsemen that we've already talked about and already had. So I think that's bringing it all back together and stuff. And this was a real hot topic in Rome at the time, because you had just Rome, all sorts of, you had plagues. Yeah, I mean, for years, really, for the Roman Empire, going back to the time of Christ all the way up to like 300 AD. There was a 15-year plague in there. At one time, there was 5,000 people dying a day a day in Rome between, like I said, that plague or between barbarians. There were entire villages just wiped out. Everybody died. And they think that, you know, at that time they thought it was like this prophecy, these four horsemen coming and attacking, and death was just running rampant. You know, we had the plague after that. So there's been a lot of times throughout history where a big chunk of people have died. And whether it's part of the horsemen, I don't know. There's a saying, I don't remember who said it, but said we're always one generation away from the end of the world, you know, which is a real heavy thing to say if you think about it. I mean, so it's like, hey, do your stuff. And I think when you look at prophecies like these and things, you can, if this is your beliefs, you can see signs of things like this, you know, depending how deep you want to get into it and read about it and stuff. But it's just crazy, you know, these horsemen, even though the Bible was written like 2,000 years ago, a lot of this stuff, the allegory is there for it. You know, yeah, we're not weighing bread on a scale, but there's other things, you know, gas prices even, you know, stuff like that, that makes these timeless. And I think that's the most haunting thing about this, is that at any time, hey, the horsemen are here. And that's crazy. And on that note, we're done for the week. Thank you all so much for listening. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Just look for The Night Nerd. We're out there and everywhere. Love to talk to you about this kind of stuff. And if you want, you know, a private conversation or a longer conversation, email me, nightnerd@thenightnerd.com. Otherwise, I'm Lance. Thank you all so much for this week. It's been a lot of fun. It's been crazy. It's been deep. It's been heavy, but all in good ways. Can't wait to see what we're going to talk about next week. But until then, have a good one.